This is why I say Juan and I are the same person.
There you go. How about that?
That's scary.
Yes.
This is the only time you'll ever see us in a room together.
This is right. Scary. Because
we're the same person. Because we're the same person. We can't be in a room at the same time.
I love that already.
Welcome to Artistry Avenue, a Reclaiming Our Time podcast where we examine the intersection between theater and social issues. This is Natasha A. Jackson, Executive Director of Reclaiming Our Time Productions.
And I am J. Martrice Henderson. I am the Artistic Director for Reclaiming Our Time Productions.
And I'm Juan Isler, Technical Director for Reclaiming Our Time Productions. I don't know why they sounded like this to y'all.
It just sounds so beautiful. Oh my goodness.
I feel like the ladies on the SNL skit.
I feel like I really am driving in the Cadillac.
To the satellite.
Sipping on gin and juice, David. Sipping on gin and juice.
This is awesome.
So wow. if you haven't noticed yet, we have some guests in here with us today.
Oh, are we supposed to wait?
We are so excited to have two phenomenal individuals that, what are the words that I want to use to describe
There's
them?
So many words. There's a lot of words. They're multi-hyphenates. They're actors. They're directors. They're friends.
They're family.
They're family.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So this is home. This is home.
So we have, how about you introduce yourself?
Why don't you introduce yourself first? Okay. I like that much better.
And then
I'll introduce myself.
Okay.
People are going to be like, what are they doing?
We threw out the entire rule book.
Exactly.
There's no rules.
Yeah,
there's no rules.
So I am Serena, like the tennis player, Ebhart Zumbrunnen, which leads me to my sweet, dear husband of 36 years, David Zumbrunnen. So there's your introduction, dear.
Awesome.
That's it for you.
I just take my cues from others. I just like what she tells me to do.
You've taught him well.
Thank you.
You've taught him well. So thank you so much for joining us on our podcast today. And where do we want to start? Where do you want to jump in?
There's so much. They didn't mention their company, but David and Serena are the founders and facilitators of EBZB Productions, which has been in practice for many, many years now. We would love to hear how that started. What was it organic? Was it a very strategic thought of how to start EBZB?
You want me to dive in? Okay, sure. Well, first of all, because I did not introduce myself, allow me to thank y'all for having us here.
Oh, we're grateful you're here.
We're so pleased to be here and be doing this with y'all, and very impressed by the introduction that you just gave. So anyway, thank you. So, all right, that being said, so EBZB Productions. So Serena and I had performed over a decade or so, probably, professionally, Serena longer than I have. And we'd run some nonprofit theaters. I'd been general manager at Playmakers Rep, and Serena was running Temple Theater, and then I moved on to NC Theater Conference. So we'd done a variety of work with various organizations in the nonprofit sector, and we realized that we had the network, if you will, for pursuing our own entity, our own production company. At the same time that was happening, that we were looking at that possibility, Elliot Engel, I can't remember who approached us, whether it was Elliot or Glenn Hawksworth, who is a wonderful actress. If I have a chance to talk to her, she'd be wonderful for this. But they approached us about me doing a production called The Night Before Christmas Carol, okay, which Elliot has written. To have Charles Dickens creating the classic A Christmas Carol, right? And that was in the mid-90s. And they had two other actors, one in the Triangle area who had originated the role, and then another actor of New York who could not do an engagement in New Jersey. And I was third choice. They came to me, and Serena and I did this performance, and we got offers to do it elsewhere, right? So, yes, it was somewhat intentional, but it was also just a lovely happenstance that we happened to be in the right place at the right time. And that for a number of years was our signature production, which then evolved into a number of approaches. People requested us to possibly and commissioned us to do certain plays, certain educational work in the schools. Serena was approached to create certain scripts, the Rites of Passage being one of them, about the Wright brothers, which toured North Carolina and then went on to tour the East Coast and out to Seattle. So over a period of, I'd say, 6, 7, 8 years, that's how it started to evolve. So again, it was intentional, but it was also a wonderful happenstance.
So I'll throw in that it was also a lot of happy accidents that happened. We had started with Night Before Christmas Carol as sort of a signature piece. That was 26 years ago. And David was working with North Carolina Theater Conference at the time, which is a consortium for theaters. And I was down at Temple Theater. And we both, we both left our jobs and our day jobs, I should say, even though they were theater related. And I got pregnant.
Great financial planning.
Intentional or organic?
Well,
good question.
So,
good question.
The thing is, right. If you see him, you know. If you see the kids, you know who he is.
Oh, yeah.
But the happy accident and all of that was, you know, we were taking a giant leap of faith. A giant leap of faith. And we had been trying to get pregnant, but we had been trying so long that we forgot we were. So it still was a surprise when we got pregnant. We weren't, you know, we weren't checking the watch every month.
I'm so glad you said that, because usually you say that we'd been trying, and I was, and I always wonder, I'm like, were we? I didn't like it. I thought things were just really rolling. I just like things were really great rolling, you know?
But, oh, gosh.
I'm sorry.
It was our hope to get pregnant, but, you know, at some point. Well, I'm a juvenile diabetic, so the chances were slimmer than normal, and we were later in years, and so we just forgot we were trying, and then, you know, Carlton was in our eyes. So really a lot of this took place when we didn't have jobs. We were just finding out we were pregnant, and everything started rolling. All these happy accidents occurred, and we'd been doing Night Before Christmas Carol for a while, and it's a seasonal production. So there were only, you know, November and December was our busy time. We were picking up other work with film and commercials and doing maybe a play or two somewhere else for with an equity house. But,
you know, I'll jump in and say that there were a couple of factors that really helped us take on those approach that when people would approach us to create and generate certain work, whether it would be Rites of Passage, War Bonds, some other pieces that did not succeed as much as those other pieces. Two big factors that were happening at the same time, whereas that the time frame that Serena's referencing, is that number one, we had a woman by the name of Linda Bamford, who you may have heard of, who recently passed away. She was a renowned and respected leader in arts education and arts integration here in the state of North Carolina. Well, she and Serena had known each other for decades before I even came on the scene, before Serena and I met in college. But she had followed us and realized that we were, and we didn't expect this, and we weren't looking for it, but she realized that we had the potential to actually go into communities, go into schools, and do certain residencies where we would we would guide them. We were basically like adventure guides as they started to create oral histories and adapted them for the stage. And we found that we were unexpectedly, really through their work and as guides and through Linda's guidance, there were some transformative experiences in those communities. So Linda Bamford was a key role in that, in getting us out into the world even more so, okay?
Linda coined a phrase called balcony people. And I continue to use that today. We have so many balcony people. They're the people who stand in the back of the balcony and watch over us and create opportunity for us. I and like they're that. Always nurturing us and guiding us. And I have Well, we both do, but since I was a child, my first show, I was 6 years old at Raleigh Little Theater playing Gretel in The Sound of Music.
Oh, wow.
And 6 months later, I found myself cast in a national tour of The Sound of Music in the same role. You can see how that was helpful to have already done the role. But Linda was there, and since that time, up until her recent passing, she has been the primary balcony person. But we have so many balcony people who have just given us their wisdom and showed us how to move forward and open doors for us, and we are ever grateful. And there's so many that I was able to thank Linda before she passed. I didn't know she was going to pass. But was so grateful. But there's so many people who have been those balcony people for us that we have not specifically thanked. And I just hope they know, because there's no way we could have done this on our own.
And Serena's right. There are a ton of balcony people, but there's also one other individual who Juan hasn't met, but you two have met, and know why we adore this individual. And that's Serena's mom, Glenda Ebbold. I mean, you know, and there's an important point. I'm not sure of the phrasing, what the phrase is, but, you know, we had this little extra piece of, we had a little card in our pocket that we could, you know, bring out at any time. And I'm not diminishing the role of Serena's dad or Carl Ebbold as well. But Glenda was there for our child care. And Carlton had just been born, and we were starting to receive all this plethora of offers to be in various places in the country and elsewhere. And we could not have possibly have done it without her availability to come and take care of Carlton while we were on the road. And it offered us, and y'all have met her, and you've met Carlton, and it was this beautiful bond that got created along the way that was not expected as well. But there was no way we could have done it without having Glenda available for childcare.
That's a big issue for women artists, is not having, all parents, but women tend to do a lot of the childcare in our culture. And so there are women who kind of have to sit out there for 15 years, their theater careers, because they have to do the childcare, and not have to, they get to, but it takes everything to do that. So it was so nice. Or it's not affordable.
Yeah, you know, it was affordable. The affordable and the logistics of it would have.
So yes, my mother is a great part of the reason we got to develop the way we did at the time we got to develop.
Definitely a shout out to Uga. I know we haven't gotten to Native yet, but there were many of rehearsals in their basement where she would not let me leave unless I took something home to eat.
She's going to feed. I was going to say, she's going to feed
Uga,
you.
I just ate. Take something.
I mean, what other studio, rehearsal studio, do you have catered meals?
Home cooked catered meals. Because you definitely don't have it here right now.
Uga had her time. She was Miss Tobacco Queen 1954 in Halifax, Virginia. So she's had her moment in the sun. Go, Uga.
I need to see pictures. I need to see the trophy.
Awesome. So that was. Oh, I'm sorry. That was a part of how the EBZB Productions, you know, came to fame.
That's what I say, happy accidents. Yes. We had an idea and a somewhat of a plan, and we always try to surround ourselves with people who know a lot more than we do.
Yeah.
We know that we don't.
We punch above our weight.
Know it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know a lot of the stories that you all produce are very, very much rich with history and historical pedagogy. How is it that because that now that we are in our school systems, we're trying to erase a lot of that history? How important is it now that we still have those stories in our school systems and the production that you all are doing?
Obviously, it's very important, but I think we'd all agree there. But I think when this question comes up, I always try to make sure that we state at the start, a lot of our work is rooted in making sure that we tell stories that might otherwise not be told. Okay. And, you know, and I'll just dive in with Native as an example. I'm sure we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. But you know, Native, as we've traveled this journey with the play and then ultimately the film, The Problem of the Hero, where I am now, and I think many of us in the creative team are, people ask, why was this done? Why was this created? And yes, we were approached initially to do, to create it for different reasons. But at this point in time, I would say with Ian's incredible writing in the play and his contribution to screenplay, it really is encouraging people to embrace the discomfort of the issues and the topics that we're exploring, not only in Native, but in other plays. And yes, we've been commissioned and had opportunities presented to us that have dealt with history. I know in my childhood I was raised in a household that embraced history and embraced exploring it. That was important, and we had tons of books, and we have a lot of books in our household. So exploring history and stories that may not have otherwise been in our history books when we were growing up. All that having been said, I think Serena and I had these conversations often. Yeah, there's concern at this point in time and I've seen it in action with some of my political activism, my arts advocacy, in local communities. I've been present for certain organizations that are out there that are very, very skilled in their language and how they present it to the communities about how they want to protect their children and how they attempt to bring back a form of engagement and civility in our communities that doesn't seem to exist right now. And I've seen it. I don't want to use the term code switching, but it's almost like a code to say, you know what, we want to make sure that we have a say in what kind of content our kids are getting. Del Turner, who is a vice chair, an African-American female who has been a mentor to our son and who is vice chair of the Chatham County Board of Education. I'm not going to phrase it the same way she did, but she has said it many times in public engagements, and I continue just to admire how succinctly she's able to put it. But she says, you know, kids are there to learn. In the schools, they're there to learn about what they don't know. And how can they learn what they don't know unless we allow them to reach out and find and discover things that they don't know? So I'm always concerned when I see certain folks with agendas or certain mindsets try to impose limitations on what kids can reach out and learn.
I've got an anecdote I'd like to tell you. You all can edit it out after the after the recording if you want. But I have a show called In One Ear and Out the Other that teaches. I got help writing it with someone who teaches 11th grade AP history and who also helped write the national standards for 11th grade AP history. But it's got a lot of North Carolina references in it as well that applies for both 4th grade and 8th grade. So this is a perfect piece to go in the schools. It's the history of America through the 20th century. It starts with President William McKinley being shot. It ends with the planes hitting the World Trade Center. And it is played right down the middle. I mean, I have my politics, but this salutes politics on both sides of the aisle. It has pop culture. And everything that I mention, the kids see in something that's happening today. So we talk about Grandmaster Flash. Well, the kids in the schools today may not know Grandmaster Flash, but they do know hip hop. Right. And so there are all these things that if they tease out, the whole idea of the show is to pique curiosity and let them go afterwards and go Google it, you know, go find more about whatever piqued your curiosity. And it comes with this tremendous slideshow and it's karaoke. We sing God Bless America. We sing, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, we sing Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? So, I mean, it is a fun, interactive show that teaches history. And it doesn't try to slant you. It just presents pretty much the facts. But I've had great fun presenting it. But I did take it up to Shelby, North Carolina, one year. And I had four performances in four different schools. And I had done the first three. And we were, it's the second day, and we're going to do the fourth performance. My hair is sprayed and curled. My lipstick is on. And I'm telling you, when my hair gets sprayed, I'm going on stage. Because, you know, that's a lot of, that's a lot of work.
That's work.
And so I get a tap on the shoulder, and it's the principal. And she says, I need to see you in my office. And all the kids are already in the audience. And I, of course, I obeyed out of respect. And I followed her. Well, David noticed something was wrong, so he followed me. And then our pianist noticed something was wrong, so she followed. And we went into her office, and she said, I'm going to call this show. I'm not, we're not going to do the show. And I said, okay, why? And she said, well, I have gotten an email, and I understand that you call Billy Graham a bully. And in the show, I say that Billy Graham teaches from a preaches from a bully pulpit.
Of ABC News, when he was carried on ABC News.
Mm-hmm. And she looked blank. And I said, you do know what a bully pulpit is? And she said, I am not familiar with that term. And I said, oh, well, we could go get a dictionary and look it up. And okay. I am not someone who entertains conflict.
It was a tense conversation. Mm.
I avoid conflict like the plague. Mm. I don't like it. But suddenly I had said this, and I was doing everything I could to haul it back in my mouth. But I was just so surprised that a principal did not know the difference between a bully and a bully pulpit. And she called the show. She had us escorted out of the school.
Oh, my gosh.
By armed policeman, armed sheriff's deputy.
School officer.
And all the kids were dismissed back to their class. They didn't get a show. They weren't told why. But the what we really think the issue was is that we talked about Matthew Shepard in the play. Shelby is a very conservative area. Gotcha. And with all respect due to that, and I am respectful. This show was just history. It was just the facts. It was fun, mm-hmm. but it was just the facts. But she wanted to take what she heard and make it mm-hmm. sinister.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Because they weren't all the facts that she wanted. They weren't just the facts that she wanted to hear. I'm sure some of the facts she did want to hear, because we do talk about Billy Graham, and we do talk about In God We Trust, and we do talk about the Pledge of Allegiance. But there were other facts she didn't want to hear. But with this show, you get them all. You just get the facts.
Right. I think Serena's being very polite about what the potential motivations may have been. That's my own personal
perspective. Well, I don't know because she wasn't truly forthcoming about what the issue was, but I can't think that she pulled the show because I talked about Billy Graham preaching from a bully pulpit.
Because she didn't know what that was. So right. How could she pull something she wasn't
aware of? But there was
of?
Something in it that she didn't want her kids to have, even though the Arts Council had approved it, even though the other three schools had had great fun with it. I mean, it got a great response. But so, fast forward, I've done this show in multiple schools, good response, nice comments from the educators in the most part, for the most part. The show itself is not slanted, it just is. Mm-hmm. But quite frankly, this year, I didn't even put it out for the schools to pick up because I'm scared.
Yeah. You know, and we have removed ourselves from artist rosters for artisan schools for a variety of reasons. What we've experienced and what we see happening is of concern, and we're not sure. There are certain areas in this country and certain places in this state where we would be welcome, and there are others where we would not be. Okay. Now, all this.
We're still going in the schools.
We're still going in the schools
by request.
Right, by request.
We're just not actively pursuing those rosters.
I think the most important thing to answer your question mm-hmm. is why we are so rooted in historical perspectives in our work. I go back to the old truism: in order to know where you're going, you must understand from whence you came. Okay, and that means understanding all of from whence you came, and not just papering over what is uncomfortable,
cherry
picking, or painful. You know, whatever is difficult to explore or difficult to discuss. We're not gonna necessarily seek to create conflict, but we're not going to put it away in the closet and lock it up. Sure. You know, in order to know where you're going, you must understand from whence you came. That's really the crux of a lot of our work.
So that example actually kind of leans towards Native, and we talked to Ian Finley earlier and he shared with us how you all approached him and how the whole thing of Native was developed. But my question now is, have you ever had, because you do have a school version of Native, have you had any pushback?
No, as a matter of fact, the opposite. We took our first performance where Josh and David and I were all a little terrified, was down at a school called the Robert E. Lee School in Southern Ponds.
A little clarification on why it was named Robert E. Lee High School. It is named after a former school superintendent whose name was Robert E. Lee. It was not named after the Confederate general.
But still, just
to make sure everybody's clear on that.
The imagery of that is interesting. And we went in and I thought, you know, this is the first time we've really done this for this age group. We had done for adults, for general audiences. And I thought, I need to probably give this audience some context.
A little context here is, beyond that is that Josh and I were nervous as cats, essentially, because we didn't know how we were going to be received. Do you remember this?
I'm trying to.
Southern Pines.
A lot's happened since then. Before COVID.
The very first time we'd ever done it for students.
Okay.
And
sure.
So yeah. I put together curtain speech, and I wanted to explain the word. We use the word Negro in the show. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's a pretty charged word today for young people. So I wanted to explain that that was the word they were using in this time period, because it's a period piece. So in 1941, even Martin Luther King was using the word Negro. This was not us being pejorative. That was the word for the time. And I wanted to get that out of the way, because I didn't want it to be, high school kids will go, ooh, did she say? You know, and I just didn't want that to be an issue. But I also explained to them a little bit about the book, because to have knowledge of Native Son before you see Native is very helpful for context. You don't have to, but it's helpful. So I explained to them, and I knew, well, I was hoping that this would have the effect that it did. I said, Native Son was a brutal, brutal book. And it changed my life when I read it. But I said, it's a banned book. And it can be hard to find. Some schools have banned it. They used to study it, and then they banned it.
Some schools still ban it.
And some schools still ban it. Well, I said a couple of other things in the curtain speech. The fellows did the show. They did an excellent job. The audience was with them the whole way through. And two things happened after the show. The first thing was, as the kids were leaving after the talk back, I heard one of them say, you know what? This was like a big cup of Jesus. It was the best compliment I think I've ever received to Ian and David and
These are 11th grade high school.
A big cup of Jesus. Yeah. And then the second thing that happened is their school library had a rush on the book, Native Son. They had 6 copies, and half an hour later, they'd all been checked out of the school library.
Wow.
Now, that's the power of art.
That is an amazing example.
We drove their curiosity. Mm-hmm. We gave them context, and then they saw the work, and they all wanted to know more. And I have a feeling that that particular class is taking forward with them a context that they wouldn't have had without the art.
And you know, you ask about pushback. I don't think there's ever been any particular project, that we've ever taken on that hasn't had some pushback, some doubts, some reservations, skepticism,
criticism.
Whatever. I mean, even Night Before Christmas Carol, I can't imagine a single project that we've encountered that has either shrugs or who cares, or why are you doing this? You're on a fool's errand, what have you. And sometimes we have been on a fool's errand, but we've had enough success that has been enabled us to pursue projects with some risk. With Native and ultimately the film The Problem of the Hero, I think, I wouldn't call it pushback. I think there have been some concerns, some initial concerns when we were taking the project on from the Paul Green family and the Wright family, both families, because of the enduring some enduring pain that exists between the families. I think there are some family members that are seeking out some resolution that might ease that. But I think there was skepticism on behalf of both families. And I think some devotees of Paul Green have been concerned about how we've presented him. But I, frankly, and I think that I'm sure there are concerns of how Richard Wright may be presented. I don't know. But in the response to Native and the problem of the hero, I frankly stand by, and along with the rest of the team, I stand by every single bit and every single moment, every single word uttered, every single promotional expression we've made. I stand by it all. Stand by it all, without a doubt.
And when we come back, we'll have part two of David and Serena. So stay tuned.
Thank you for listening to Artistry Avenue, the intersection of theater and social issues. Artistry Avenue is a Reclaiming Our Time production. To learn more about Reclaiming Our Time, visit www.reclaimingourtime.org. That's reclaimingourtime.org. If you would like to share your stories or give us feedback, you can email us at reclaimingourtimethepodcast@gmail.com or call us at 984-401-0616. We look forward to hearing from you. Our inaugural theater production, Native, written by Ian Finley, runs September 13th through the 22nd, 2024, at the North Raleigh Arts and Creative Theater in Raleigh, North Carolina. Tickets are now available for purchase at www.reclaimingourtime.org/current.